I guess I'm your leader today for the Old Testament reading, and this year Dr. Bartelt and Schriever and I will kind of be rotating on the Hebrew feedings. And I trust that either Dr. Veltz or Dr. Gibbs will be here for the New Testament section. The pericope for the Hebrew is Proverbs 9. And in the Hebrew Bible, as you recall, the wisdom books are in the writings, the third part, Psalms, Proverbs. Old Testament has quite a bit of wisdom literature, Proverbs, Job, Ecclesiastes. You also find quite a few Psalms that are in this category, wisdom Psalms. So it cannot just be ignored if we're interested in having a theology that takes into account all the voices of the scriptural choir. Too often I fear we are tempted to become reductionistic in our theology and only look at certain books of the Bible. So Proverbs is a helpful reminder that you do have this category of wisdom literature. Somehow that has to fit into our Lutheran theology. We can't just kind of conveniently ignore it. So I would maintain that a necessary corollary of sola scriptura is tota scriptura. All of scripture, all of the voices need to be participants. Proverbs 9 is part of the introduction of Proverbs. You have 1 to 9 in which Lady Wisdom talks to us just about the value of wisdom. Now, wisdom in this section is personified as a woman. People make hay on that these days. Sophia is the Greek, and so they want to talk about, you know, Sophia worship and how there is this feminine component in God's nature and so on. I think that's, you know, I'm not too excited about that. I think that's pushing things too far, but it's misunderstanding what the Hebrew writers were doing. The word for wisdom in Hebrew is chokmah, which is a feminine noun. In Hebrew, you typically make abstracts with feminines. Hebrew is a gender-based language. Every noun has to either be masculine or feminine, and so you have to pick either gender, and they decided in their convention of their language to use feminine nouns for abstracts. So chokmah, wisdom, is a feminine noun. Therefore, if I want to do the device of personifying wisdom, I'm going to personify it as a feminine. Why? Because chokmah is a feminine noun. See? So it's not that there's something intrinsically female about the characteristic of wisdom any more than there's anything intrinsically male about the characteristic of wisdom. It's simply a grammatical category that has been personified as a literary device. A good example. Har in Hebrew means mountain. That's masculine. Giva in Hebrew means hill. That's feminine. Now, Har and Giva are basically synonyms. They refer to high hills. Is there something innately female about a Giva and something innately male about a Har? No. It's just kind of ad hoc what gender they assign to a given word. It's the same way in German, you know. Spoons will be feminine and forks will be masculine, and is there some intrinsically gender-based female or male characteristics that are involved. No, it's just kind of the ad hoc assigning of the language. So wisdom is an attribute, and Hebrew uses a feminine noun for that word. Okay, now, there is, though, so Lady Wisdom is speaking. There is something more, though, in chapter 8. In chapter 8, as you recall, Lady Wisdom talks about how she was there before the creation of the world and how she was there with God creating the world. What that means, then, is that wisdom was there with God creating the world. Now, there's a debate whether we should take that as simply a literary device, God created the world through wisdom, or whether we should see this wisdom as actually a person. The technical term is a hypostasis of Yahweh. And the tradition of the church, early church, took it as more than just a literary device, but as a person. And that the New Testament tells us Christ is our wisdom. New Testament tells us that this wisdom is the pre-incarnate second person of the Trinity. So that it's possible to see it that way. In which case, the Lady Wisdom who's speaking in, or the wisdom who's speaking in chapter 9, would be more than just a personification or literary device, but it would be the second person of God, of the Trinity speaking. And that this is part of the background to John 1 when he says, in the beginning was the Logos, that he is picking up on this Proverbs 8, in addition, of course, to Genesis 1. Anyway, there's a lot of debate on that question. But in chapter 9, Lady Wisdom sets out a banquet, and she offers passersby, she invites passersby to come and dine with her and to receive her gifts. She can offer wisdom, insight into life. In contrast to Lady Wisdom, there's also Lady Folly in verse 13 and following. And Lady Folly also has a banquet that she sets out for passersby. So there's kind of this debate going on. If you go into Lady Folly's banquet, you enter the realm of death. You'll probably never come out. Whereas if you go to Lady Wisdom's banquet, there is life in its fullness. Now, following upon her invitation, for instance, look at 9 verse 6. Leave the simpletons and live. Walk straight in the path of understanding. So, wisdom offers life. But it's an offer of life to the confused and to the wise. But she's not going to waste her time clobbering the arrogant and stubbornly sinful and wicked. Clobbering them over the head and constantly trying to invite them to the banquet, because they're kind of a lost cause. So she's not going to throw her pearls before the swine. That's what verse 7 is referring to. So you have to distinguish between the confused and the stubbornly persistent opponents of wisdom. And the pericope is 9 verse 8 to 12, which so often happens. I don't know who these guys were on this pericope committee, but they should have had some exegetes in the group, because these guys are constantly making the wrong divisions. Constantly. And the pericope does not begin with verse 8. It begins with verse 7. Any fool can see that. One does not have to be especially wise to recognize this. But I don't know what they were thinking. Anyway, sometimes what they do is they just don't like a verse. So they don't start at that verse. They'll start a verse later. Verse 7 is clearly the beginning. Verse 7 to 12 is a nice little unit. And then verse 13 begins the next unit. So in chapter 9, verses 1 to 6 is the invitation of wisdom to passers-by to come dine with wisdom. Verses 7 to 12 are some general admonitions to others how to deal with the wise and how to deal with the stubbornly scornful. And then verses 13 to 18 is the reverse of the first set, Lady Folly and her banquet. Okay, verse 7, Yoser lates, the one who chastises a scoffer. Lates, of course, is that word that occurs in Psalm 1. Blessed is the one who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of scoffers. To be a scoffer is a skeptic and not open to the instruction of wisdom. The one who chastises a scoffer receives unto himself kalon, shame, disgrace. So you're going down into the mud together with this scoffer, and you'll end up simply getting muddy. U mokiach, the one who reproaches. Now that's a hifil participle of the root yakak, yod kaf keith. Remember, hifil participles put mames in front of the roots. And the first yod verb changes that yod to a wow. Yakak in the hifil does not mean to cause to do something. Many hifils simply have regular meanings. So each word has to be treated differently. You can't make them all mean to a causative. And yakak in the hifil simply means to reproach, to make a decision for, often used in a courtroom. The one who reproaches or gives reproach, le rasha, to the wicked, muma, his blemish. Now, this is what makes Hebrew poetry so much fun. How do you put the words together? And there is no verb here, so I would take the first two words as what we call a casus pendens, which means it's just kind of hanging out there. And really, the sentence is mumo. So it goes like this. With respect to one who gives reproach to the wicked, comma, it is his blemish. Or it is shame for him, or it is disgrace for him. So the idea is basically parallel to the first half, but the syntax is different. Notice the parallelism then between scoffer and wicked. So we're not just talking about wisdom categories, we're also talking about, in this case, justification categories and sanctification categories. And so this wicked is an unbeliever who's opposed to the instruction of God and God's wisdom. Verse 8, therefore, because this is a general rule, this is what usually happens when you try to give advice to a scoffer. Therefore, verse 8, now we have a negative command. This is how you do a negative command in Hebrew. You use al plus the second person imperfect. It's actually a second person jussive. But the jussive and the imperfect look alike. But you know it's a jussive when al is in front of it. Lo is in front of imperfects. And this is how you do a negative command. It's called a vetative. Don't reproach a scoffer. Pen, lest lest he hate you. So that's what he'll do. He'll just hate you. He will not learn from this experience. He will not try to, you know, better his ways. But you're just making an enemy. Hokak, this is an imperative in contrast. Don't do that. What should you do? Reproach, or give reproach, give admonition. Look hakam to the wise person. So notice the contrast between wicked and wise, scoffer and wise. Va yehavekka, and he will love you. Notice the antonyms, hate and love. Obviously, they're opposites. So the one hates you, but the other loves you. Why? Because he loves wisdom. Therefore, he loves the person who gives him wisdom. He's interested in more wisdom. He's looking, you know, he longs for this. Verse 9, tain, he continues with these imperatives, give, lakakam, to the wise person. Give what? That's interesting, no direct object. In the context, give wisdom. But it could be give anything, probably. Give to the wise person v'yekam od, and he is wise more. He becomes wise more. He becomes wiser still. So the wise person adds this extra wisdom that you have to offer and becomes wiser, and he rejoices in it. Hoda. Now that's a hifil imperative of yada. Cause to know. Give knowledge. Le tzaddik, to the righteous person. Va Yosef, and he will add lekak, learning. He will add learning. In other words, he will gain. He will gain learning, extra learning in addition. Notice the relationship. When we're talking about the wise person, we're talking about the tzaddik, the righteous person. Tzaddik then would be the one who's justified and in whom the word is producing a life pleasing to God and who is looking for more wisdom. Okay, so it's kind of an interesting bit of instruction here that we should, on the one hand, we're eager to give wisdom to people. On the other hand, we're hesitant to throw our pearls before the swine. And now how does that actually play out in life? You know, should I give this person advice or not? Well, is this person open to receiving advice or not? You know, it's those countless type of daily practical applications that makes this so profound, but also so difficult to apply, because it means that you have to read people, you know. Who am I talking to here? Am I talking to a cynic, a skeptic, a scoffer? Am I talking to somebody who values wisdom? What? And but that's basically the advice. We offer our pearls to those who appreciate pearls, but we're reticent to throw them before the swine. Okay, verse 10. Tahilath kokma yirath Yahweh. Yirath Yahweh would be the subject. The fear of Yahweh is the tahilath kokma, the beginning of wisdom. This goes back to chapter 1 already. This is a leitmotif in the book of Proverbs, right? The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. In chapter 1, they use reshith, the beginning. It could also be the chief part of wisdom. Here, it's clearly the beginning, the first step. So the kind of wisdom we're talking about is not a godless wisdom, not just a worldly wisdom, but it begins with faith toward God. It begins with a vertical dimension. That's the kind of wisdom the author is talking about. So fear of Yahweh, reverence of Yahweh, and notice it's not just any God up there, have some kind of religious life. No, it's Yahweh, that God. Fear of that God, that specific particular God, the God of Israel, that's the beginning of wisdom. Okay, v'da'ath kadoshim bina, and the knowledge of kadoshim is insight. A nice Hebrew parallelism here. But what does kadoshim mean? Well, it's a plural. It's the adjective, kadosh, holy ones. Now, the question is, what's the referent? Adjectives modify nouns. And what's the noun that we're supposed to assume here? Is it human beings? A person who knows saints, who knows holy people, has insight. Is he making a twofold statement? Fear Yahweh and be on intimate terms with fellow believers, holy people. And that's a blessed life, a life of wisdom? I don't think so. I think Kadoshim simply is referring to Elohim, and he just ellipsed the Elohim. So I think it's parallel. The Holy One, the Holy One, God. Then verse 11, now wisdom speaks. So far, there was like a third-person narrator giving instruction. Now wisdom herself speaks in verse 11. For by me your days will be multiplied. And now yosifu, to increase, hifil of yasaf, and they will increase, lakap, for you. And now comes the subject, shanoth kayim, the years of life. So your days will multiply, the years of life will increase. How? Be by me, through me, through wisdom. So this is the path to a long life, through wisdom. Then verse 12, the narrator, I think, returns. It could be a Lady Wisdom still speaking. If kakamta, if you are wise, kakamta, you are wise, lak, to you. Now what does that mean? Well, the lamed, I think, is a date of advantage. If you are wise, you are wise to your own advantage. So it's helpful to be wise. And now comes the contrast. Notice in Proverbs we have a lot of this, a series of contrasts, antitheses set side by side. But, and you got to supply the if you scoff, levadka tissa, by yourself you carry, doesn't have a direct object, what do you carry? You carry the scoffing, or you carry the, I think it's you carry the scoffing. In other words, the scoffing itself is the punishment. The sin is the punishment. Okay, that's it.